The opinions and commentary expressed in the following presentation do not reflect the views of this station, the Economic Club of Indiana, or the Economic Club's agents or sponsors.
Broadcast of the Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series is made possible in part by ProLiance Energy. ProLiance, adding power to energy. Information is at ProLiance.com.
Welcome to the Economic Club of Indiana. Today we bring you Tom Linebarger of Columbus-based Cummins. He's held various jobs in the company and in January took over the top spot as chairman and CEO.
We are privileged today to have an opportunity to learn more about one of Indiana's best-known companies. Cummins, Inc. Is headquartered, minus the CEO's office, in Columbus, Indiana, which is only 40 miles away. And as I hope all of you know, Cummins is one of the state's leading Fortune 200 companies. My notes say it employs 44,000 people. We'll have somebody with more updated figures, I suspect, in 190 countries, which is truly amazing to think about a manufacturing supply chain distribution and sales across that scale. 600 distributors last year earned over $1.85 billion on $18 billion. And I hope you noticed recently an announcement of an expansion of their facility in Seymour. We are privileged, as I already introduced, to have Tom Linebarger here, who is the chairman and CEO. It is a position he assumed only last January, but he's been with Cummins since 1994, worked his way through a whole series of positions, including in this century as chief financial officer, executive vice president, and then president and chief operating officer. He came to Cummins the old-fashioned way, the way I like to think about it. He came out of school and went to work for Prudential as an investment manager, learned a great deal around the world and about finance, got more education, and had an opportunity to come to Cummins as a summer intern, if I remember correctly. And another good example of why, please take summer interns and keep talent here from all of our institutions. He has a background in both business and engineering, which was a conscious choice on his part, building on bachelor's degrees in economics and mechanical engineering from Claremont McKenna and Stanford, master's degrees in business and manufacturing from Stanford's Graduate School of Business, obviously a perfect fit with a worldwide heavyweight manufacturing firm. So please welcome to the stage, to the podium, and to the Economic Club, Tom Linebarger.
Well, thank you, Charles. And I want to thank the Economic Club of Indiana, and I want to thank the program chair, Chuck Williams, who I know is not here today, but I really appreciate the invitation. It's a great honor to be here. I have to admit I'm a little nervous about this, and it's not just the fact that there's 1,000 people in the audience or that I'm being broadcast on the radio. It's because they invited my mom. And there's nothing that makes me more nervous. I get my tie straight. Am I stand up straight, Mom? It's also kind of a weird setup for me to be at the table here. It kind of reminds me of my wedding a little bit. I think if you had a mullet, you could have been my best man, maybe. Yeah. It'll work on you, I think. Yeah. Well, it's good to be here. I am humbled and honored to be a CEO of a company with an incredibly rich history, and one where I've spent nearly two decades of my life. It's also a company that many said could not survive as an independent company. And just a little over 10 years ago, I was wondering if the doubters had it right. So I guess it really is good to be here. Things have changed a lot at Cummins, though, in the last 10 years, 10 short years. And I have the great fortune and great responsibility to lead this company that is both strong and positioned well for growth. I believe that Cummins has an incredibly bright future. And I hope you share my enthusiasm about Cummins by the time this talk is over. So for the next 30 minutes or so, I will share with you the story about how Cummins became the company it is today and where we are going from here and how we plan to get there. Thanks for joining me. and I'm going to come around the front just because it's easier for me to talk from the front. I get to start with this fabulous set of warning statements. Anytime I'm going to share numbers with you, the new rules are I need to warn you about disclosures. So there you go. I assume many of you have seen this before. I think we probably spent enough time on that, so let's go to the next one. Just in fairness to you, I thought I had to give you a little bit more background. It was a great introduction, but I thought it's good to know who's talking to you and what perspective they're coming from, so I thought I'd share a little bit more with you. So I'm just the sixth CEO with Cummins since its founding, so you can see why I'm a little humbled and honored by this to having this position. And I'm the first degreed engineer to lead a technology company, which is a little odd, really. I've been with the company for a while. I was a summer intern in 1991, as Charles said, and I joined the company in 1993, and I've had lots of positions. I've worked in nearly every part of the company. I was the CFO. I ran the supply chain organization. I ran a couple of divisions, so I know where all the bodies are buried. I've been all around it. Personally, I have a background that I need to share a little bit with you. I've been married 20 years, and I have the great fortune of loving my wife more than I did when we were married. I have two great teenage daughters. You'll get a better view of them in a second. And they have the remarkable ability to create great joy in my wife and I's life, and also incredible consternation. I mean, it is a remarkable ability, but they have mastered it. I come to this job with a very strong sense of purpose. It's a purpose that I've developed over the course of my working life, but I've really come to understand it and know it a lot better in the last few years. I love solving problems, and I love taking a group of talented people from all walks of life, bringing them together to address the toughest problems in the world. That's what makes me tick. It makes me love my job and come back every day. And so that's really what I'm trying to do here during my short time at Cummins. And personally, I also bring a strong set of values to the way that I lead. I have a kind of what drives me in terms of values sort of falls in three broad categories. First is I have a strong sense of trying to create fairness and justice in the world. And I realize it may sound a little grandiose, but I feel like as a leader, as someone who can impact the world, it's my job to leave it in a better place than I found it in terms of more people having equal opportunity and equal chance to achieve what they can achieve. And I feel like I have a little bit of a stage to do it, so I'm going to try to do it while I'm here. Second is I have a sense of that hard work is its own reward. So hard work, of course, creates opportunities, I think, but it also, beyond the results of the hard work or the rewards you get, it has dignity and pride in its own self. I'm not exactly sure where it all comes from, but I have a sense that my hard work value comes from growing up raised by a single mom who, after being divorced and having my brother and I, had to go back to school and get a degree, had to go get a job, had to make sure we were getting dinner every night, got us off welfare, got us into good schools, and afforded us with the opportunities we have. And it kind of, as I reflect back on that, I think, if you can bootstrap that one, you ought to be able to go to work and give it your best every day. So I think that's at least part where it comes from. And the last thing I'd say is that I in my life, I need a balance. So I balance work with family and friends, and I have a lot of joy in my life. And if I didn't have that balance, if I didn't have a rich family life, lots of fun things to do, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't come to work with the same energy that I do. So that balance is really important to me. I take all my vacation days and I enjoy every one of them. So that gives you a sense of how I think about my job and my work. So with that, let me head into to where I'm going with Cummins here. I said I cared about teams, and this is a team of terrific talent. Right? So this is my two daughters and I. And we are working on a really tough problem here, which is how to swim in the frigid waters of Maine. And you can see we've got the right equipment, the right focus to get it done. So there's your sense of purpose for you. By the way, if my daughters were in the audience, I would not be able to show this picture. So don't tell them, Michelle. All right, let's go to the next one. All right, so Cummins. So again, many of you know about Cummins, but just to make sure that everyone's starting from the same place, I just want to give a quick snapshot overview, and then we'll get into the meat of it. So here's Cummins, world's largest manufacturer of engines for commercial use. We do some consumer products, Dodge Ram pickup trucks. If you don't have one of those, I highly recommend them.
But mostly it's for commercial. And I'll show you some pretty cool photos of the stuff our engines go into, but it's a wide range of applications. We have a global footprint. You heard about the fact we're in 190 countries. In fact, we have our customers and partners are everywhere, and they're going everywhere, and they're leaders in their markets. So we have customers all over the world. We have manufacturing plants all over the world. I'll give you some numbers on that later. We have technical investments all over the world. And we have distribution support network, which, frankly, is one of the big draws for doing business with Cummins. As you know, you can get your product, service, and support anywhere you take it, in any market you take it. We have developed a skill and a reputation over many years as a technical leader in engines. And also extends to power generation and subsystems that go in engines, because we now have four divisions: engines, components and subsystems, power generation, and then the distribution support division. And all share technology, and we've established a lead in that technology, again, over many, many years. And recently, as emissions hurdles or emissions regulations have gotten more challenging, we've been able to get a lead over competition in the technology that makes engines and power systems work better while emitting fewer greenhouse gases or fewer oxides of nitrogen, et cetera. And that ability to get the engine to do what the customer wants it to do with lower emissions is what's helping us now in terms of finding partners and growing. That technology lead's a big driver. And then last thing is we power in more types of equipment than anybody else. So we can make that one engine work in lots of different things. And that's really what it takes to build scale in our business. So you got to see some of the applications there in the photos, so I won't go on further on that. So Cummins is really strong right now. Financially, we're in a terrific position, and I'll take you through some of the other things about that's making us, putting us in a strong position, but let me just talk a little bit about that financial transformation. So you can see the company now has $18 billion in sales. Our EBIT, which is earnings before interest and tax, which is net, different than net profit that Charles gave you, and I like this one because it sounds higher, but earnings before interest and tax, $2.6 billion. EBIT percent, 14%. And for a manufacturing company, that's a really, really good number. And if you're in a 14% numbers manufacturing company, you're doing a few things right. Debt to capital, 11.8%. That means we have more cash on our balance sheet than we have debt. So we have, that means we are able to make investments. We have a strong financial position. Return on equity is the number that our shareholders look at to say, okay, that means when I give these guys money, how much are they earning back for us? And the answer is 31%, which is pretty decent, which is why our stock price has gone up so much. So financially, a super position. But it hasn't always been that way. It hasn't always been that way. Let me just show you 2000. You can look at the numbers and get a sense of what the difference is. But let me just point out a couple. One line I want to highlight to you is 48% debt to capital. And you know, the numbers don't tell the whole story. The numbers are bad enough. 48% debt to capital, though, and earnings of 3.8%. The second half of the year, we actually lost money. So we were negative in the second half of 2000. So with negative earnings and 48% debt to capital, as you can guess, that was a really, really tough time to work for Cummins. And when I was a CFO at that time, unluckily, and we had to refinance the company. And that's when I started to wonder if we were going to make it, because we went to renew our revolving credit loans from the banks, and they weren't very interested in renewing them. And some of the hedge funds bought shares in our company and started selling our stock short. And what they were doing was leaking rumors that the banks weren't going to finance our company. And then our stock started falling further, and more short sellers got in, and it was looking pretty bad. And I remember for about 60 days, my jaw did this lockup thing. And every day I came to work, hi, how are you? I couldn't open my mouth all the way because my jaw was just locked and I couldn't get it to let go. It was really a tough deal. And even those financial numbers in that story doesn't tell the whole story. The people impacts were really, really bad. Not only were leaders of the company questioning whether we were going to make it and losing confidence, but we were having to lay off people. We made a decision a little later, a few years after this, but in this time frame, to close our first plant in Columbus called Plant One. When you're a company, long-standing company, you never want to close Plant One. That's not the one you want to close. And a whole bunch of people lost their jobs. Some of those people lost the jobs in a time of their career where they were not going to get another job. And I mean, that's just a terrible, terrible human impact. And there's not a day that goes by that I don't think about the people that lost their job at that time, because we just didn't get it right. We didn't get the management of the company right. So that's the story from 2000, and that's the story of the transformation. So let's talk a little bit about how that happened. How did we make that transformation from that company you saw in 2000 to the company now in 2011 that's poised for growth? And here I have to talk about my predecessor, Tim Sulzer, who just retired at the end of this year. What he did that will have a lasting impact on Cummins is that he aligned the leadership of the company around a few important things and got us all rowing in the same direction. And it sounds almost trite. I'm embarrassed in a way to say that's all it took, but there are so many companies out there, good companies with good products and good leaders, but their leaders aren't rowing in the same direction. They're rowing in a boat, and since they're all rowing in different ways, the thing just keeps going in a circle and eventually just tips over. And what Tim did was get us aligned around a few really important things. What are we here for? What's our vision, mission, values? What are we trying to do? What are our strategies? What are we following? Which ones are we jettisoning? We're done with that. Let's go. And lastly, he got us focused on results. He built on a fantastic culture that cared about communities and cared about employees, and started saying, if we want to care about all those things, we also need to get results every time. So efforts aren't enough, we got to get results. And that really is what turned the company and turned the ship in the right direction. A whole bunch of other good things happened, but that's really the main change. We also got this technology leadership established in emissions, and emissions hurdles got tougher. That meant that if you didn't have the right technology, it was going to be hard to win the market. We made investments in emerging markets. I'll talk a lot more about that. But to be fair to the predecessors of Tim and I, a whole bunch of people made some pretty smart investments in emerging markets years ago, and they didn't pay off until now. So, but those, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of giants in terms of making good decisions in the company's history. And then Six Sigma, I highlight this because, of course, execution matters. And the company executed well over the last 10 years. And Six Sigma was an example of the kind of program we put in where we were able to get waste out, improve productivity, and find talent where we weren't finding it before. Get young, talented people who have new ideas, get them into Six Sigma programs, start to recognize what they could do, and bring them into leadership jobs. So Six Sigma and other execution programs are really, really helped us carry out the plan created by the leaders at the top of the company. So today, as I mentioned, we are poised for growth. So as I look forward, I see a future for Cummins which is even brighter than the last 10 years, which have been transformational. So that's why, where my enthusiasm comes from. And so why are we so enthusiastic? Why do we have this great opportunity? It's because we have the strong financial base to go from, and our performance is good. So we have money to invest. That's great. We also, though, have an unrivaled global position. All those places, all those customers and partners, manufacturing sites, those things now mean we can compete with people in a way that others can't do it. They don't have all those same resources. They don't have access to those global supply chains. We also have these strong customer and partner relationships where we get to share costs with those customers and partners, and also they're growing fast. So the customers that we're choosing are the ones that are winning in the market. So as they win, we win. And the last thing I'd say is that the importance of emissions and fuel efficiency technologies just keep getting greater. So the U.S. and Europe have put in new regulations, but now all the emerging markets are putting in regulations. So all of a sudden, all those folks that were only focused on cost before are now focused on the technology related to meeting emissions and high performance, or the technology to get fuel economy up and CO2 emissions down. And that's all good for us. The harder it is to do, better for us. So that's all going our direction. That's why I feel so optimistic about Cummins growth in the future. Let's go to the next one. And I talked a lot about our investment in emerging markets, so I just wanted to show you a couple numbers. This chart shows that today our U.S. sales are about 40% of our total sales, and you can see the rest of the pie chart around. This chart underestimates the impact from India and China, though, because we operate in joint ventures in those countries. So we don't have them in the sales, but the impact for them is much greater at the profit line coming through joint ventures. But this chart, if I showed you this 10 years ago, this was 60% U.S. And China and India would have been slices so thin you wouldn't have been able to read them. So this has been a dramatic change in the mix of the company revenues around the world, and dramatic. That's been driven by the growth rates of those emerging markets and Cummins' position in them. Let's go to the next one, Annie. So what's next? So we got a great, we got great opportunities. We have super, we're poised for growth. So what do you do? Well, you learned a little bit about my background. What do I do? What do? We set really, really tough targets. That's what we do. We make the problem as hard as we can make it. And why? Why would we do that? It's because we have an opportunity at Cummins that doesn't come around very often, which is to become one of the world's great companies. And without trying to sound grandiose, if we can do some of the things that we have in our plan here, people will look at Cummins and say, yeah, that's one of the companies I want to emulate. I wish I, you know, our company needs to go benchmark their strategy. That's the way to do it. And we can create sustainability for our employees, for our customers, and our communities. So with that opportunity out there, what, you know, what choice do you have but to set tough targets? You got to do it. So here we did. We set growth targets. You can see $30 billion, $30 billion by 2015. And that growth rate is 14% from 2011, where we set the target, versus 10% growth rate during those transformational years I talked about. So we're ramping up the growth. And at the same time, we're ramping up the profitability. So grow faster and make more money while you do it. And the thing that's great about these targets is we benchmarked all our peers. We looked at all the great companies of the world. We, you know, gathered anyone you could think of, GE. You know, we put them all in there. Emerson, we put them all in there. And these, if we hit these targets, we are indeed among very, very few companies in rarefied air in terms of financial performance. And when I show you how we're going to get there, we're going to be also rarefied air in terms of the way we do it. So they're tough targets. All right, let's go to the next one. We have a plan, though. Tough targets are great. You need a plan, right? And so we have a plan. We're leveraging that same vision, mission, values, and strategic principles we've been using for many years. That's that culture that we think is what got us to the dance in the first place, and we're going to keep using that to take us forward. But we also have added some key strategic enablers that we've called accelerators. Why would we call them accelerators? Because it's all about ramping up our growth from 10% over the last 10 years to 14 or 15% for the next five, and doing it in a much more global environment. So that's why we call them accelerators. These are all really, really interesting ideas that I would love to tell you about, but I just want to warn you, I've spent 30 minutes on this one slide before, so I'm not going to do that, fortunately for you. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take one of them that I think will differentiate the company when we get this done, and that's about developing from a multinational to global, and I'm going to tell you about that, and just know that the rest of those have just as much cool stuff behind them, okay? So let's go to the next one, Annie. So multinational global, what do I mean by that? The first question you might ask is, given you have this great global position, why are you even working on this? Aren't you already there? And the answer is, yeah, we have a great global position. And yeah, it's the leader in the industry today. But things are changing. And they're changing fast. And what's happening? Well, competition's getting a lot tougher. And I'll give you one example, which I think will tell you about it. There's a company called Weichai in China. And Weichai, just 10 years ago, was a company with old technology. Like, if you saw one of their engines, it would have been like one of ours in the museum down in Columbus. I mean, this was not a nice-looking engine. It was a smoky beast. And in just 10 years, they modernized their technology, they've grown their company, and they are now the largest heavy-duty diesel engine supplier in the world. In the world. Bigger than Cummins for heavy-duty engines. How'd they do that? Well, modernized technology is one. Two is China became the largest truck market in the world. It's now three times larger than the U.S., and they sit right square in the middle of China. And they have a cost structure that's terrific. They met the market right where they needed it, and they took the lead. So that's our new competition. Yeah, we still have to worry about Caterpillar. They're a good company, and they're in a whole bunch of our markets. We have lots of competition. But we have new competition coming, and they're tough. Second thing that's happening is customers are getting more demanding. And that, I'm sure none of you will be surprised by that. I was thinking to myself, I was in the Apple store the other day, and I'm looking at the Apple store, I'm thinking, why isn't every store like this? And that's exactly the experience we get. As soon as one competitor does something really, really well, you just expect to get it everywhere else like this. Now Best Buy is a dud. No one cares about Best Buy anymore, right? Because now Apple store is better. But you have to move in 1 second to make it just as good as the best guy right away. And that's exactly what our customers are asking for. So if Weichai does something better than we do in Western China, they're expecting us to do that for them everywhere in the world, everywhere they go. They want the very best service they get everywhere they go. Doesn't really matter whether they sell one engine, we sell one engine to them, or a million. They want best service everywhere. And that's just like we are. That's not going to stop. We might as well just get used to it. And then the last thing is the environment is moving all the time. We cannot rest on our laurels if we're going to win in the future. So there we go. Can't stand still. And what I've kind of thought about as a general theme for the company is if we can make every company, customer, everywhere in the world feel like they get the full power of Cummins every time they talk to us. They get everything we got, technically, service, all of it, no matter where they're standing. They operate a bus fleet in Nairobi or a bus fleet in Atlanta. They get the same effort, technology, service from Cummins. We'll win. That's when we've nailed it, when it's like that. Let's go to the next one. So what do we have to do that? We're going to have to align global, regional, local strategies a lot better than we do today. So we have these great global strategies. I mean, we are the envy of a whole bunch of our competitors in China, but we're still not as well aligned as we could be. Not even close. Not even close. And to get that kind of alignment, we need leaders to be able to have conflict with each other, to argue a little bit about what's the best thing. Should we have two products, one cheap, one expensive, or just one product that's in the middle? And by the way, they're not going to agree every time. And if every time we don't agree, we just go to our separate rooms and not talk about it anymore, company loses because we lose alignment. We lose speed, we lose reaction time, we maybe lose the market. So we've got to be able to get aligned, have disagreements, and move on. Right? Argue about it, find the right answer, and go for it. Second one is business processes have to work just as well everywhere in the world. That sounds easy, right? Well, of course you just do that, right? Make them work everywhere. It turns out to be really a pain. IT problems, the fact that you don't have scale in every place, you know, so having as many service people in Nairobi as they were doing in Atlanta is not easy because it turns out we sell a lot fewer engines in Nairobi. So can you really afford all those? Whether you can afford them or not, customer expectations are the same. The only question is whether you're going to meet them. So that's going to be hard to do. Third is leadership has to look like the United Nations. Now, it doesn't mean we have to perform like the United Nations. but we have to look more like it. Because, you know, it turns out that if we want to have a real intimate relationship and understanding of customers and markets, you need to have people that grew up there, that design products there, that think about those markets in a detailed and in-depth way. And that means you need to have different points of view at the table. To have debates on this stuff, different points of view need to be sitting at the table, at the leadership table, not just somewhere in the company, at the leadership table. Because if you don't, their voices aren't going to get heard, and we're not going to make the right decision. So we need to do some change in there. And, of course, we need to move some of the jobs around, too. Not everyone who gets to make a decision about where assets go should sit in Columbus, Indiana. That's not going to make us have that kind of relationship that we need with customers around the world. So, you know, all comes back to the same thing. Customers get the full access to Cummins wherever they are. That's multinational to global. Now, that whole strategy and plan is really an outcome of our values. And I just have to say that our values, you know, they are who Cummins, this is what Cummins is. I mean, I know a lot of companies have values, but I just want to tell you, for us, it's different. That from the first day I joined the company, I heard about the values. Every promotion I got was my boss talked to me about the way I was exemplifying the values or not. And it was clear to me that if I was not exemplifying the values, I would not be promoted. And that's precisely how I feel about it. And I don't mean we get it right every single time, because we don't. But that's what we're aiming for. This is how we want to do it, not what we want to do. And I'll let you read through the values, and if you have questions about any of those, I'll be glad to answer them. But this is another half-hour slide if I go through all of them. But they're really meaningful to how we do work. And we do it all over the world. You imagine, if you're going to go and grow your business in Nigeria, you're going to have to figure out how you want to operate there. Because you're going to be challenged with a few different ways of doing business. How do you want to do it? Well, if you don't know who you are and how you want to operate, you're going to get yourself in some big difficulty. So you need to keep core. You need to stay close to who you are. I am going to talk a little bit about corporate responsibility because I want to tell you how that value influences the way we work and what we do. So let me go to corporate responsibility. The value statement is that we want to serve and improve the communities in which we live and work. Simple as that. serve and improve the communities in which we live and work. Why would we do that? Well, first of all, we think it gives us a competitive advantage. I know that's a weird way to think about it, but we think because we serve and improve the communities in which we work, we get ahead. How do we get ahead? We attract leaders who have a broad sense of what leadership means. They're values-driven people. They want to lead with a big L. They want to do stuff. They want to do big stuff. And I'll tell you, that works. I'll just put myself in that category. You know, when I first came to Cummins, I was in my management recruiting office in Stanford Business School, and I was looking through a whole bunch of brochures and trying to find a manufacturing company that I wanted to work for, and I picked up a brochure that talked about Irwin Miller and some of the things that he thought and he brought to Cummins, and I said, that's the company I want to work for, a company with that kind of values, that kind of idea of what leadership is. So I know it works, because I can speak for one. I could survey every one of my staff members with the same question, and all of them would raise their hand and say, nah, that had a lot to do with why I came to the company. So it's good for us to get people. Second thing is, you know, when we want to retain people and have them stay, people want to live in communities that are rich and full and growing, not shrinking, and they want to send their kids to good schools, right? So how the community is how your workforce is. And the last is, a whole bunch of us feel like life has more to it than making a profit or earning a salary, and that we get busier and busier with teenage daughters and all kinds of other things, and there just gets to be less and less time. And if I can give back to the community, if I can fulfill that basic human need of giving back at the place that I'm also happen to be earning the paycheck, that makes me want to stay at this company, and I can be more engaged for longer. And that critical word's engagement. Because to win, to get $30 billion and 18%, I need them all engaged. It's still going to be a tough go, by the way. But if I get them all engaged, we got a shot. And I think a good one. If we don't, it's going to be tougher. So that's why that's so important. And we have three focus areas: environment, education, social justice. But rather than talk about those more, let me just show you a couple examples. And I want to show the first one in video form, because I think the video does a lot better job than I would do. So let's just quick show it. It's short. And if you wouldn't mind.
Cummins is involved in projects across the world to bring power to remote areas. Pottawatti, a village in western India, presented a special challenge for employees at Cummins India. The village's 10 households are located in a forest preserve, connected to the nearest town by a long, narrow path that twists up a mountain. The path isn't wide enough for vehicles. Pottawatti is reachable only by foot. More than 500 times a year, the residents of Pottawatti carry the rice they grow up that rocky path for dehusking at a mill in the town. Residents have long dreamed of having their own rice mill to do the husking. The walk to the mill consumed time and energy that could be better spent on other farming activities. But without any source of electricity, the mill remained just a dream. One thing Pottawatti does have is a rich population of trees. That's where the engineers from Cummins India enter the story. Working with the India Institute of Technology in Mumbai, the Cummins Engine Research Facility developed Cummins generators that run on oil from the inedible seeds of three types of trees, frequently found near remote villages in India. In April 2010, a small team from Cummins met with the leaders of the village and a charity in the region to discuss building a rice mill in Pottawatti with electricity from a Cummins generator running on vegetable oil. Bringing power to the village meant all the machinery to extract the oil from the seeds, the rice mill, and the generator had to be disassembled and carried in by foot. And the work had to be done quickly to beat the monsoon rains that start in early June. Cummins employees joined village residents and members of the charity in walking the equipment to the village. By far the heaviest item was the generator engine, some 250 kilograms, or more than 500 pounds. The engine was strapped to two long wooden poles. Lifting the poles on their shoulders, more than 20 men carried the heavy engine over the rocky path to the village. Some men wore sandals, others were barefoot. It would take nearly 3 days to carry the generator engine down the path to Pottawatti. Once the engine arrived, Everyone worked into the night to reassemble the equipment. Before long, Badarwadi had power. Soon the rice mill was working. It's just one example of what can happen when the power of Cummins is unleashed to improve communities.
Okay, that speaks volumes, doesn't it? By the way, our Indianapolis distributor, thank you. Our Indianapolis distributor, Dave Smithson, is here. He will carry a genset to your house if you want to purchase one. So you can have it there. But let me show you another example, which is right here at home, about how corporate responsibility is working for Cummins. We have an organization that we participate in. It's a public-private partnership called the Columbus Education Coalition. And this coalition works on education issues in Bartholomew County and the region. And we've got a number of programs we're doing through that coalition. And we brought together people from different parts of the community, and they're doing amazing things. They're doing things with early childhood education. They're doing things with middle school. They're doing STEM projects. They're helping high school kids graduate and those on reduced lunch to be able to get coaches to make sure they finish high school and go to get 2-year or 4-year degrees. And we're doing some of the most unique things in the country on manufacturing education. We've got new manufacturing degrees that people can get out of high school going into Ivy Tech. We've got a manufacturing center. We're beginning to have the way we recruit into Cummins, you need to first get one of these manufacturing certificates. So this kind of development is adding to people's skills, making sure we can get better employees, but also raising pay opportunities for those folks who want to work in manufacturing and maybe don't want to do a 4-year degree. So a whole bunch of really good stuff going on there, thanks to the creative energies of people from a whole bunch of different areas. Cummins is only a participant in that, but it's really, you know, our participation, I think, is helping the group a lot. So that's what we're doing locally. I want to bring it to a close. I know we're getting short on time. What I need to do, though, is conclude with one last idea, is that Cummins' success growing globally is benefiting people here at home. And it's a really important message. We continue to grow around the world. You saw the numbers. I mean, we are expanding all over the world. But we are investing here in Indiana to coordinate and run and help fund that growth. We just recently did an announcement down in Seymour, Indiana, where we're adding a manufacturing building, adding a technical center, and adding jobs, 290 jobs. That's in addition to a 150 job announcement we made at the same site just 2 years ago. In fact, that's our fifth job announcement in southern Indiana in 5 years. Fifth in 5 years. Most of that time, we were not growing sales very fast in the U.S. Most of that time, we were growing sales abroad. And that center down in Seymour is going to make engines that are going to be shipped all over the world. And we now employ almost 8,000 people in Indiana. And that's back up to almost up to the peak we were in the late 90s back in Indiana. And the jobs have shifted to higher paying, higher skilled jobs in Indiana. So let me go to the next one. There's just a few statistics to try to put it in perspective for you. First line is our total sales. Since 2005, we've grown our total sales 82%. That's just a cumulative number, 82% from 2005 up to $18 billion. You probably remember that number. U.S. revenue has grown slower, not surprising, because the emerging markets are growing faster, 52%. Our total jobs as a company grew 30%. Why the slower growth rate? It's productivity. Right? Without productivity, we can't earn the returns we have, so we're having more productivity. So employees are growing a little slower than sales. But we now have 44,000 globally, by the way. I thought you might be interested. I think maybe, Charles, you had that number right, which is a good job. But since 2005, we've grown employees in Indiana by 41%, faster than our total employee growth. How could that possibly be? How can you be growing sales slower here and employees faster? It's because multinational global companies like us, we've got to figure out how to get all this stuff working together. That's an alignment point I was making to you. We have to align all these operations, and that means we need highly capable, talented people here at our headquarters. So when people tell you that when multinational companies are going abroad, they're outsourcing other jobs, don't believe them. Don't believe them. It's not only not that simple, it's not true. For Cummins, at least, it is not true. Let's go to the next one. We did a little study a couple years ago. I just thought I'd show you the impact. It's an overall economic impact study. I apologize that the data is a couple years old, But I think the basic idea is clear. Back in 2010, we had 6,600 jobs in Indiana, and we estimated the overall economic impact of salaries and other things that those employees gain to be about $1.3 billion. When you look at what happens to the state when we employ 6,600 employees with that kind of economic impact, we figured out that for every job at Cummins, there's a little under three jobs around it. And that means maybe there are suppliers, maybe there are retail operations, et cetera. And look at the total economic impact, almost four times the economic impact from the employees. So us growing abroad has everything to do with Indiana doing better. And I promise you, as I stand here today, if we were not growing in China, in India, and Brazil, I would not be standing here today. There'd be somebody else, and they wouldn't be from Cummins. So the fact that we're looking outside is helping us grow here at home. So let me bring it to a close. This is a big time transformation of this company. And I have to thank Tim and the other leaders before me who really got this transformation going and had a lasting impact on how Cummins will be in the future. And we transformed the company, turned around our results, got focused on the future, and the result is we're stronger than ever, and we're poised for growth, and our opportunities are bright. I mean, as I said, I am so enthusiastic about the opportunities going forward, I don't know what to do except keep setting higher targets. But we have set some tough ones, right? We've got vision, mission, values, they're all fine, we're leveraging those, but we've set really high growth targets and really tough profitability targets that I think could take us to a level of performance which will put us among the best companies in the world, which I think is an entirely appropriate place to set your sights. And I think we can do it. There's some tough challenges, but we have a plan. We have terrific, committed people, and I think we can achieve those objectives. And we're on with it. So far, we've done pretty well to start with. First quarter results were out, and they were in line with where we're headed. So far, so good. But there's a long journey ahead. So thank you very much. I really appreciate your attention. I'll open up for question and answer. Charles will elbow me when it's time for me to quit.
We'll take questions. Keep them coming. I've got a couple to start. I want to remind you, you can tweet a question. I want you to know, Tom, that somebody thought you're funny and they like the corporate responsibility.
Well, good. So my daughter got the note in. That's great.
Excellent. Yeah. That's the first question. It was the first question brought up, and it follows nicely. Given your early involvement at Cummins in China, you've now made major commitments to plant and engineering. How do you view that commitment, given that some major firms have now pulled out of China, and the example was GE recently saying they're going to emphasize Australia?
Yeah, I think my view about China is it's a complicated place to do business for American companies. It's a different place to do business. And my view of our company is that's exactly what we're trying to do in our multinational to global operation, is we're trying to figure out how to be as good in China as we are in the U.S. And that takes a whole bunch of thinking, adaptation, and being willing to admit that you don't always know the right way every time you start. And I think we've had tremendous success to date with that. And my view is people that ignore the Chinese economy do so at their peril. I know the last 6 months or 9 months, the economy slowed, but make no mistake, that economy has been growing at three times the rate of the U.S. in the last 5 or 6 years, and it will be growing at somewhere between two and three times the U.S. for the next 5 years. This 9 months may not be, but from here forward, that's what I think you can expect. We believe that being first in China is important to us being first in the world. So we will be engaging fully. We will be making mistakes. We have already made some. You don't always choose the right partner. You don't always implement every program you want to right the first time. But by learning from our mistakes, we are adapting and getting better every single day.
We've got a great range of questions. I'm going to pick up one very practical one. Someone asked a factual question you can answer quickly, and that is, how many engines does $1 billion in sales represent? A question of scale. And then I'm going to follow that with the other extreme, which is, How would you assess the current state of business in the U.S. economy?
That should be easy.
How far apart can we get?
So let me start with the easy one. Last year we sold about a million engines during 2011. Hmm. And, of course, each engine's a little bit different price, but across the whole company, for our $18 billion, we did a million engines. And I think the second one is, how do I assess the U.S. economy? Since that's a tough one, let me just say this, that I believe that manufacturing in the U.S. is not only possible, but it is cost competitive, and we can grow manufacturing in the U.S. We have very, very capable people. We have ingenuity and skill here that we can build on. We, of course, need to continue to focus on workforce development. We need to make sure we're enhancing the skills of our employees. The jobs that we want to bring them in today are not the jobs we wanted to bring them in 10 years ago, but they are good jobs, and the Americans can fill it and fill it well. We have to work together in public-private partnerships to make sure we're getting the workforce ready to do these jobs, but once we do, we'll be terrific. And I think our investment down in Seymour is proof that we believe that.
There are several questions related to sort of the process of you developing your goals and strategies, including just the basic of doing the tough goals. How did you get to that? And then taking into account, another question relates to alternative fuels and how do you build that in your thinking?
Great. So the way we set the goals was we sort of triangulated between three things. One was we looked at the opportunities we had for growth and development, and what kind of improvements we could make in efficiencies and profitability. So that was kind of the bottoms up. How good can it be? The second thing we looked at was looking outside and saying, what are competitors doing? What are some of the best companies doing? And where should we be targeting our future? And the third thing we looked at was how, when you put it all together, what are some of the challenges that we're going to face? What are those? How much are we going to have to invest to address those challenges? And what kind of opportunities that we can create? So it's bottoms up. It's top-down strategy, and it's comparing ourselves to outsiders, and that's how we came up with the targets. And then, of course, I just increased them by a lot. No, I didn't do that. I did, you know, I do stretch my team, and I have a lot of faith in them. I think they're capable people, and I ask a lot of them because I think they can do it. And so far, they've never disappointed me.
One of the investors in the room, I think, is asking, will the government of China's decision to allow the some movement of the yuan have benefits for Cummins?
Yeah, my basic view, you know, we have a relatively balanced currency profile around the world. We definitely see some negatives and some positives when currencies move. But, again, because we operate in lots of places, you know, Chinese currency or any other currency movements are not gigantic changes for us in cost structure or whatever. And as I mentioned to you before, that whatever the structure is, what we want to do is outcompete everybody else. So we kind of spend a little less time trying to figure out what the right structure is and a little more time trying to figure out how we're going to beat everybody else if the structure is there. Having said that, my own view is that getting the Chinese currency better aligned with where the economies are today will help the overall world economy. And I think their moves to begin to let the currency appreciate over time is welcome, and I think it will help develop growth across the world economy. It'll also increase their consumption patterns in China, which will be good for the long-term stability of China's economy.
Thank you very much for your remarks, your comments, your answering of questions. Thank you, audience, for so many questions. I'm sensitive to the time, so we won't get to all of them. Thank you very much.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you for the remarks. As I said, thank you for taking the time. Thank you for showing us the kind of leadership we have here at Cummins and in Indiana and for encouraging the continued development of our workforce. Thanks to our luncheon sponsor again, INHP. We appreciate you making this afternoon possible. Thank you very much. We also want to take a moment to thank the staff who of the Convention Center and Center Plate Catering, who I don't see in the room, but they do an amazing job of serving all of you during these events, and we appreciate for their hospitality.
Today's presentation, if you want to hear it again or recommend it to someone, will be on WFYI 90.1 on Monday, June 4th at 1 in the afternoon. It's also available for download at WFYI.org. Our season for the next year will kick off on September 14th. The keynote speaker that day will be Margaret Spellings, who is senior advisor to the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, president of its Forum for Policy Innovation, and formerly Secretary of Education. Please watch your inbox for the season's lineup. It's a terrific list, as we've mentioned already, Ben Bernanke and Secretary Spellings. And if you aren't receiving emails from us, please add your name to those green lists on your table. Have a great afternoon, and thank you all for being here.
You've been listening to Cummins Chairman and CEO Tom Linebarger, who wraps up the 2011-2012 Economic Club of Indiana Speaker Series. The monthly Economic Club meetings will be on summer recess now, resuming this fall with a new roster of speakers, including Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke, former Education Secretary Margaret Spellings, and ESPN analyst and former Indiana Pacer Jalen Rose. The Economic Club of Indiana is a production of WFYI Radio in Indianapolis for Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations. Thank you for joining us. I'm Sharon Alseth.